Welcome to the Minerals and Royalties Podcast, the home of CEOs and investors in the minerals and royalties space.
Hey guys, this is Tim Powell from the Minerals and Royalties Authority. I recently sat down with Rob Rosa, CEO, and Jeff Boyd, president from Brigham Royalties, who came back onto the podcast to do a look back of 2022, including all the different transactions and different factors that played a role in their merger with Sitio Royalties. Let's jump into the episode and hear more of what Jeff and Rob had to say.
Rob and Jeff, good to have you back on the podcast. Congrats on a successful merger, Brigham Minerals into Sitio and the exit for your team. And you're back at it again with Brigham Royalties. So excited to get into that. But I think it would be fun to do a little bit of a look back, right, on the Brigham Minerals story. And the last 12 months were pretty exciting when you look at it through a rearview mirror, the transactions that were coming up on the Sitio side, on the Brigham side, and then how it all culminated in September with the announcement of the merger. And so no place better to go than directly to you guys who were involved to get that perspective. But again, congrats and thanks for coming back on.
Yeah, I appreciate you having us. Obviously, as you said, a lot's transpired over the past 12 months. And, you know, as you talked about, us doing large deals to working the potential merger throughout most of 2022. So a lot of hard work went on because these merger type transactions are very low probability events. So you have to continue to manage the business like it's going to be against going concern as well as work the process. So it was a very busy 2022 for us, but obviously we created a lot of value for shareholders ultimately with the deal when it closed in December. But like you indicated, we took very little time off. We closed the deal, I think, on December 29th, and we were right back in the office recreating the wheel on January 3rd. So back at it, as you said, with Brigham Royalties. So we're excited to be here.
Awesome. So I'm going to kind of talk about the first couple of transactions. We'll go back to November 2021 and feel free to jump in, add any commentary along the way. And just for everyone listening, if you want to go back to the first episode I did with Rob, that was posted on the podcast in April 2022. So a lot's happened since that point. So this will be a good update. But what I'm going to do, instead of going back to the complete origin of Brigham, I'm going to go really to the origin of when you guys started doing larger transactions, because you built your portfolio predominantly through the ground game. And we go into the details of why that, you know, why you saw the biggest value in the ground game in the first episode. But November 4th, 2021, you announced your DJ Basin acquisition from Principal, and that was 8,400 NRAs and roughly 95, 96 million, if I'm not mistaken, mix of cash and stock. So that was really your coming out party in terms of a large marketed process, transactional takedown, right? And so kind of over to you to comment on that.
Yeah, I know we thought looking back at that deal, very transformative from us, as you indicated, you know, the largest deal to date at that point. I think probably the deals prior to that had been more in the $40 to $50 million range in the Permian. And so we just saw this outstanding composition of assets. You know, prior to that, we'd been very active in the DJ Basin and put together a really nice position. But this position was in the core tier one of the DJ Basin under some great operators. And at the end of the day, it played out actually better than we thought it did and meaningfully contributed to production growth in 2022. So, you know, as we've always said, the key for us has always been very disciplined in the underwriting of deals. And so, you know, just another example of us, you know, really doing all the hard work on a unit by unit basis to value each unit appropriately and then provide that to the seller. And so, as you indicated, it was also a deal that was interesting in that it was comprised of both the cash and stock mix. So, you know, obviously there, the principal folks really believed in Brigham, willing to take back the stock, believed in the story and the overall assets once combined. So, you know, a really good transaction from us for one, from asset quality piece, but then also the seller taking back stock, because that then minimizes the reliance on the credit facility, keeps your debt low, because obviously that's something that if you talk to Blake Williams, who's our CFO throughout that time, going public to when we closed with Sitio, you know, the one way to screw up a mineral business is to layer on too much debt. So always cognizant of the fact that you want to manage that debt profile. So really just an outstanding transaction that really got us on a strong foot in 2022 and then allowed us to enter in a couple more deals and, you know, into 2022.
You know, it's interesting. Say what you want about the DJ, you know, there's quote unquote political risk. I think what that's translated to for a minerals owner is more development in the near term for the best rock. So it actually is a pretty good place to be if you can understand it and get comfortable with the political climate. I found it very interesting coming out of the MARC conference in April that a bit of the buzz was around the DJ, which if you said that 2-3 years ago would have been a laughable comment to make. But even Chris Conoscenti, when you guys were on the stage talking about the merger, talked about how attractive the DJ was. And so when you look back at November 2021 and that acquisition and how that ultimately plays into being a value add for Citi in the future is kind of cool to think about. But
Chris, in particular, you know, with Kim Rogers' relationship with Civitas, you know, very well versed in terms of the DJ. So they understood the value. You know, I think what's interesting about the DJ is all the work that's been put in place in terms of resolving the issues or regulatory issues and these development plans that they've now put in place, which, you know, almost on a week by week basis, you know, tell you what's going to happen in terms of where the rig's moving to, how long the rig will be there, when the frac crew is going to show up, you know, when those wells might be turned online. So if you think about the DJ relative to some other areas, there's almost like a written playbook that the operators tend to follow because it's just a lot easier to live by that playbook and work with the regulator than to have to go back and ask for changes or modifications later. So it's a really interesting basin from that perspective.
For sure. So you fast forward a couple of months. Now, Desert Peak have been trying to get public for a while and, you know, power to them. They ultimately got there through a merger with Falcon, which was announced on January 12, 2022. So now they enter the public space. They appear at this point. The combined entity was 139,000 NRAs. I think it was a good option, a good exit and a good outcome for Falcon, who was kind of a little too small and a bit stuck since they went public. Desert now gets an Eagle Ford asset. So they go from a pure play Permian portfolio to getting a good core Eagle Ford position and a tiny Appalachia kind of non-core asset that came with Falcon. So that starts their journey on diversification potentially, right? And then 1 month later, February 15th, right around Nate, you guys announced an acquisition in the Midland Basin from Echo Minerals for $32.5 million, 1,800 NRAs. So now, from my perspective, this is when I started to really get to know you guys personally. It's like, oh, Brigham's starting to ramp up. They're starting to do deals, getting ready to scale. Really interesting. You know, over to you and Jeff to talk about that deal.
Yeah, no, again, really quality Midland Basin deal that some good mix of PDP, DUCs, permits, and undeveloped. You know, one of the things, you know, obviously, that's different as a public mineral company is just the need to have near-term cash flow, near-term accretion. And so there's a really nice mix of overall kind of probably more skewed to the PDP DUC permit mix than otherwise, but a really nice mix that again, almost immediately contributed to production and cash flow in 2022. And so allowed us to kind of do a real early time, highly accretive deal in the Permian that investors really liked. And so really, you know, complemented well with what we had going on at that point, you know, in terms of, you know, you mentioned that ground game that we've always historically relied on. You know, if you think back to what we've done is, you know, probably 2,000 transactions at roughly 50 acres a piece to build a portfolio, and then supplementing that with these kind of larger scale opportunities that really complement each other really well. So always rely on the ground game, but layering in these larger type transactions with tier one geo under great operators is always something that we're looking to do at a good, reasonable, fair price to both parties.
Awesome. So now we're going to fast forward to the summer, June 27th, 2022, Citi makes its first splash as a public and they announced two transactions totaling $547 million. They took out the Permian assets of Momentum, $224 million for 12,200 NRAs, this is primarily Midland Basin, and then Foundation Minerals, a quantum-backed entity, for $323 million, 19,700 NRAs, and that was both Delaware and Midland. Again, you know, if you're going to look back, the Midland Basin asset of Momentum, you guys acquire Midland Basin asset from Echo 2-3 months before. And it, you know, from my perspective, these were all cash deals, I believe, that Citi made. You're kind of thinking, okay, they just did this merger. Now they made a big splash. These were cash deals. Citi's probably out for the year. This is this is the chatter by the water cooler, right? And then you kind of go forward and August 3rd. Now this is where I want to loop in Jeff because he's directly involved in this. So I'm hosting a minerals reception and a private dinner for a couple hundred guys in Dallas and Brigham, you guys, it was for charity. You guys were a co-sponsor of that. So appreciate you supporting a good cause. A couple hundred folks in the room. You guys have no idea. This Reuters article is coming out the morning of the reception and it's the buzz. People are coming up to me. And I remember just seeing you in the corner, Jeff, like, God damn it. Is someone, please don't ask me about this, right? And then at the dinner, you know, for anyone listening who's been to some of my private dinners, we usually go around the horn and everyone just kind of introduces themselves, you know, name, title, company, and just what's the latest, right? For deal flow purposes, so people can get together and do deals. And you were like, Jeff Boyd, bring him, no comment. And you sat down and everyone chuckled. So the reason, what was that experience like? And I appreciate you coming to that, because sometimes when, and no one knew you guys are going through this merger, but, and you're also, you know, I'll talk about the Avanti in a bit, but you got a lot on your plate at that point. Sometimes as a public company, you just bow out of showing your face in public because there's a lot of chatter and you don't really want to be asked the question and plead the fifth. So what was that like when that came out? And then I'm sure you got tons of texts and calls.
Yeah, it was definitely awkward. And, you know, I had a discussion with Rob, you know, hey, should I pull out of this thing or should I show my face? And just, you know, we agreed that it made more sense because there was still a long way to go with the Sitio deal and it could have fallen apart at any point. So yeah, I wanted to go there and make sure that people understood that, hey, just because this article's out there, we're still business as usual. We're still wanting to, you know, acquire deals. We're still active. So that was kind of the main reason why I wanted to make sure that I went, but it definitely was. I mean, I probably was asked about it by literally every single person in the room. So, you know, I just said, you know, no comment over and over and over again, and just said, you know, we'll see how it plays out. And ultimately it was a great event and happy I went.
Hey guys, I wanted to take a quick break from the conversation to say thank you to all of our podcast sponsors. Looking to ramp up deal flow for your minerals and non-op ground game? Since 2019, the Texas Mineral Company has closed on over 120 deals, totaling $110 million in value, with deal sizes ranging from $50,000 upwards of $5 million. Whether you're looking for white space, permit, duck, PDP, AFE, or wellbore-only deals, the Texas Mineral Company has got you covered. For more information on how to source deal flow from the Texas Mineral Company, please email Toby Martinez at toby@thetexasmineralcompany.com. Over the past 20 years, Riverbend Energy Group has been the definitive leader in the non-op and mineral space, where they are actively acquiring minerals in the Delaware Basin, Midland Basin, the Williston, and the Eagleford. Following their $1.8 billion sale of their non-op platform in 2022, they are also back actively acquiring non-op interests in the Delaware Basin, Midland Basin, and Williston. If you have minerals or non-op working interests in these areas that you would like to sell, then please visit www.riverbendenergygroup.com for more information. As a leading global energy business advisory firm, Opportune is well positioned to provide world-class technical, financial, and operational capabilities to minerals and royalties companies. Whether it's back office outsourcing, resource and reserve definition, land due diligence and administration, GIS mapping, valuation work, data and system integration, financial reporting, tax advisory, or buy and sell side assistance, Opportune LLP has got you covered. For more information, please visit www.opportune.com. Farmers National Company has oil and gas experts located across the country ready to provide you unmatched convenience and service for your land management needs. Whether you're looking for turnkey management of oil and gas interests or simply looking for an advisor to help you sell or lease your minerals, Farmers National Company has you covered. Learn more about Farmers National Company's team of certified mineral managers, landmen, attorneys, and accountants by going to fncenergy.com or reach out directly at energy@farmersnational.com.
Yeah. No, so here's the fun part from my perspective. And it also proves that we all really don't know what the hell's going on until anything becomes official and press release. So August 22nd, you guys press released the Avant transaction. This is big deal. Midland Basin, 3,900 NRAs, $132.5 million, all cash deal. And now the rumor mill, because I get a lot of calls, right? The rumor mill is, yeah, that Reuters article, that's Rob and team saying, F you, like, we're still in business. We're here to stay. And so everyone thinks it's a market statement. And then I tended to agree, right? And I said, yeah, no, Brigham's going nowhere. This is the third deal. Like, they're looking to ramp up. They're not looking to sell. And then September 6th comes out and you guys announced the merger with Sitio. And I'm like, all right, I had no clue. And I think I just waved the white flag. I think a lot of others did too. But it was from that August 3rd to September 6th announcement, there was so much change. It was fun. It was a really fun time for the space and for all the chatter and the deal flow rumors. It was really, really cool. So walk me inside the boardroom for you guys, what that month was like with all the back and forths?
Yeah. So I think, you know, what the key point that Jeff made is all these deals are such low probability events. You've got to just keep managing the business like you're going to be a going concern into perpetuity. So hence, you know, we had initiated the process to look at potentially merging with someone in the first quarter, maybe February or March or so of 2022. And so it was a long process. We received the first bids, I think in June-ish, maybe another round of bids in July, and kind of still at this point in August, you know, we had identified a party that we CDO that we could probably work with, but or that we felt like was potential to get a deal done. But still, there weren't the in-depth conversations that, you know, to get to the final price between the parties to say hammer out some of the key deal terms. And so we're in there realizing that this Avant deal, the 4,000 acres that you mentioned, was just tier one geo under great operators. When we looked at it on the map, we up to that point had not seen a Midland Basin deal like this with consistent development on it over time. And again, that played out. I think at the point where we mentioned the deal in our third quarter press release, there's almost 20 rigs running on that asset, over 4,000 acres. So really an incredible asset. So, you know, we had to manage the business such that there are potential for two outcomes because of the low probability. One, keep us in play, you know, people seeing us as a leader within the mineral space, but also dually working the process with Sitio. And I think, you know, announcing that deal kind of mid-August really kind of helped bring them to the table. And so, you know, it really wasn't until probably 10 days or so before the Labor Day weekend that the talks really intensified and the negotiations intensified, such that, you know, you really got to terms. You know, one of the interesting things that happened along the way was 4 to 5 board members from each company met in Houston to kind of talk about the vision of what the new companies look like. And then really the Friday before the Labor Day weekend, throughout that weekend, you know, we were up basically 20 hours a day working on negotiating final deal terms, working on the documents, calls even Monday morning at 2-3 a.m. before the press release goes out at 6:30-ish a.m., just trying to hammer out the final deal terms so everybody's comfortable with the process. So really kind of that probably 10 days to maybe no more than 2 weeks before Labor Day weekend was just probably some of the most intense time being a public company CEO, and just for the entirety of the management team, just again, working through managing the business and then managing the process. So really, but at the end of the day, you know, I think a very successful transaction for shareholders, because along the way, they've always mentioned, you know, when you go to the shareholder meetings and you meet with the larger shareholders, you know, how can we get more liquidity, scale, and float, because we want to own more companies in the mineral space. But when you have, you know, a handful of companies that are $1 to $2 billion in market cap, it really doesn't give them the ability to scale up and take meaningful positions. And so, you know, the real key is to create that entity. And with the CDO deal, you know, I think the market, the combined enterprise value of both entities was approaching $5 billion, maybe $4.8 billion. And so, you know, really giving them something that's meaningful, that they can take a sizable position. And so, you know, I think Chris and team are just at the early infancy of that, early innings of creating an entity that's going to be, you know, in excess of $10 billion. You know, I think at the Mark conference, you know, Tim, you'd mentioned that he was up there, and, you know, I think he clearly thinks that, you know, you need a $20 billion market cap company in the mineral space such that, you know, the Fidelities of the world, the Wellingtons, can take sizable, meaningful positions. And so, you know, this is just kind of the first chess move to get there.
Yeah, no, when you look a couple of years back, a gold royalty company reached out to me, David Garofalo, and I started looking into that space. And what was interesting is the gold royalty space was almost the 5, maybe 10 years earlier than the oil and gas mineral royalty space. And this is all Toronto Stock Exchange, right? And what I saw was it was the same playbook. It was a lot of guys who came out to market, 100 to 500 million market cap. Then they grew slowly. And then there was consolidation within the market. And you fast forward, you look at Franco-Nevada, which is, I haven't looked at their stock in a while, but I think 30 plus billion in market cap. And you go, okay, how did they achieve it? Well, they've been around for 20 years and there was a lot of consolidation in their space. So it's just, you think when Chris says 20 billion is a number, you know, 10 was the number I've heard from bankers and everything before this, but maybe the field goal post is moving and it's 20. That seems like a crazy number, but it's just time and continue to grow and strategic mergers like this. So no, that's interesting. I find it wild that it really came together in the last few weeks like that. And that my understanding is it was pretty far along. It's never a sure thing, but because of the scale of it, but that the Avant deal was kind of a, hey, this is going to be an extra value add for them. I'm assuming they're not super competitive because they just took down Foundation and Momentum. So they're kind of digesting that. So timing is interesting there. Was the all cash component strategic in terms of you're maybe doing this all stock merger coming up? And is it cleaner to, you know, you already mentioned not wanting to bring on debt, but all cash versus doing a mix? Is it just too complicated to look at both of them and you have to look at it in a silo deal? Just curious before we move on from the
Avant. No, I think in terms of the Avant deal was more, you know, if you looked at kind of deals as they transpired throughout 2022, they tended to go from a mix of equity and cash to largely all cash, because you wound up with the sellers really to be competitive in these processes, wanting all cash result at the end of the day. And so, you know, very fortunately, because we had been cautious on debt, we had more than ample liquidity under the credit facility. And so that allowed us to jump on an opportunity like this. So, you know, not only is it important to be manage the debt from the perspective of not over leveraging yourself because you are in a cyclical business, but also it's from the perspective that when these great deals like this pop up, you have ample dry powder to go ahead and capitalize on that opportunity. And so, you know, it was pretty obvious, you know, if you looked at all the deals, a lot of the deals kind of in this $100 million zip code, really to be competitive, you were going to need to do all cash. And so again, it came down to when you think about reviewing this deal with the board and the management team, you know, tier one asset, great operators, a lot of activity. You can see the activity coming. We have liquidity on the balance sheet, even post getting the deal done. You feel good about, you know, where you are on a debt to EBITDA basis. And so you're able to capitalize on it because again, you know, again, it gets down to the point that the probability of these deals getting across the finish line are low. And so you've just got to manage the business such that in either path, you're maximizing value for shareholders. And that's always the goal. You know, go back and look, you know, I know, Tim, we talked about some of this before, but, you know, the Brigham history is to run these types of processes to try to maximize value. You know, we did that with the Brigham expiration sale to Statoil for our private equity sponsors when we sold Brigham Resources to Diamondback, you know, taking Brigham Minerals public and then ultimately to getting to where we were in December of last year and closing the deal. We just, again, felt like we were doing in the shareholders' best interest by merging with Sitio and creating that entity had that was preeminent in the mineral space and really was that first chess move to creating that entity of scale, liquidity, and float that really was desirable to investors. So really exciting, you know, last quarter of 2022 as we closed out that transaction.
I have a couple more questions on from a strategic standpoint. As you guys are in that final 2-3 week stretch, right, where things start to intensify and it looks like you might actually get this over the line with Sitio, them acquire or merging with you brings them into the DJ, the Bakken, and the MidCon. Up to that point, they were, you know, if you remember originally when they got the assets from Desert to form Desert Peak, they were pure play Delaware. Then they did a couple of mergers with Source, and that brought them into the Midland Basin. And then they merged with Falcon, which brings them into the Eagle Ford. But then they do the two Momentum and Foundation deals, which swings the pendulum back to Permian. Now merging with you guys brings them into these three new basins. Can you just talk about, was there a dialogue around that diversification element to the merger?
You know, I think they like the diversification. You know, if you think about Noam and Chris and kind of Kim Ridge and their background, both finance guys. And so I think being, you know, that finance individual, you know, portfolio diversification always is kind of at the forefront of your mind in terms of, and when you think about it, it's minerals. And we talked a lot about shareholders about this is diversification amongst basins, diversification amongst operators, because if any one event happens in any one basin, you don't, you know, take a big hit if something happens there, or perhaps if an operator runs into trouble, it doesn't impact your quarter. And so, you know, I think their interest was when you looked at, although, you know, I think we're about 86,000-ish acres, net royalty acres, inclusive of Avant, when we sold to them about 50% of it, Permian, that, you know, the quality of the asset that we put together in the DJ, in North Dakota, in Oklahoma, just really resonated with them. Again, you know, tier one geology, always our thesis behind our acquisitions under great operators. And so when you looked at our portfolio on a map, you looked at who the operators were, the current activity levels, it just made all the sense in the world that these are high quality assets that we can give significant value to and not just the Permian piece. And so, you know, I think, you know, and then it allowed them to further scale up, create float liquidity for their shareholders. So I think it checked a lot of boxes for them in terms of, you know, continued core geo in basins, still liquids rich, which I think is important to them across a lot of different operators. And so, you know, they I think they really valued that diversification across basins, across operators. And they were obviously able to ascribe a significant value to that. And ultimately, we're able to get a deal done that we think was a win-win for shareholders. And in particular, for our shareholders, created a lot of value.
Yeah, I think it's kind of a happy medium between what royalties portfolios typically look like, you know, that were built over the last two decades, you know, scatterplot all over 16 states, interest, conventional, unconventional, cow pasture, you name it. But there's that. And then there was, oh, let's be super rifle shot focused like Avant's portfolio was. I think it was Martin and Midland only. And then there's diversification, but each part of the portfolio is pretty focused. So the Bakken part, the DJ part, the Mid-Con, Permian, Eagle Ford, these are all core positions. There's a story to tell. And I think that kind of happy medium, it gives diversification, like you said, across commodity, basin, operator, et cetera. But then it's not this like big, confusing, you know, combination of assets. So I think as a public CEO, that story is easier told. Okay, so that's interesting. The other question I had, you've already mentioned how lean you guys were from a balance sheet perspective on keeping debt down. With rising interest rates throughout 2022, and the rising cost of debt, as you're looking at merging with Sitio, they had close to $700 million, I think, of debt on the balance sheet. And you guys had a little over 100. So combined, the net debt was 820 for the combined entity, I believe. You're now partners. As you're considering that as an element of the transaction, what are some of the thoughts you guys had internally around that? And I know that they've since refinanced some of that debt and they've done a great job and continue to manage the balance sheet. Chris and Carrie and others have finance backgrounds. So I think they're very capable to manage that. But nonetheless, you know, debt is always something you got to be conservative with and cautious with. Well, just curious, the debt side of the merger and how you guys kind of viewed that.
No, I think one thing that got us comfortable with Sitio and doing the deal with them, you know, even with $800 million of debt, was the fact that when you look at their distribution policy, they were 65% you know, shareholder returns in the form of a dividend, but 35% of their cash flow is going to be retained to pay down debt and others. And so when you look at the environment, and we knew that they were going to be rapidly paying down debt. I know here in the May press release, I think they paid down either mid $30 million in terms of debt. And so now I think you're sub $800 million in debt already, inclusive of what they mentioned that they paid down in their year-end press release. And so they've already made pretty significant progress in terms of paying down debt. You know, I think what also gets us very comfortable is just the disciplineness in terms of their underwriting philosophy and how they view deals. And so, you know, they're not going to be out there overpaying for transactions. And so, you know, I think what you saw here in the first quarter was the very disciplined process. And so they didn't find a deal that necessarily fit their underwriting criteria. So instead, the vast majority of that cash flow went to pay down debt. And so, you know, that's what I think about, you know, in terms of like-mindedness, in terms of how you looked at deals. You knew from almost the very beginning that we viewed the world similarly in terms of how we value deals. So I think that's of utmost paramount importance when you think about combining and turning over the keys to someone. How do they view the world? And what's their, how do they, you know, manage, underwrite transactions? How do they evaluate transactions? And so if you're thinking about that in the same way, that gets you very comfortable that they're going to ultimately run the business in a very similar manner that we would. And so, you know, if we've been on the other side and done this deal, you know, we similarly would be paying down debt along the way. So I think they'll do a terrific job. You know, I think they also have hedges in place that to partially counteract some of the commodity price risk. So they're doing everything they can to manage the portfolio, but still provide folks with upside to deals. And so when they find the right next deal, they'll do it. But in the interim, they're going to be paying down debt and creating value for shareholders in that manner.
Hey guys, I wanted to take a quick break from the conversation to say thank you to all of our podcast sponsors. Your property is your legacy, so you should only leave it in the hands of a land management company who has a legacy of its own. If you own oil and gas interests or act as a fiduciary for those who do, you can find a long-term partner at Farmers National Company, who since 1929 has taken great pride in helping clients maximize the benefits of property ownership by providing turnkey management services and by working alongside them through generational transfers of specialized assets such as oil and gas interests and farmland. To learn more, visit fncenergy.com or reach out directly at energy@farmersnational.com. Since 2019, the Texas Mineral Company has been a leading ground game broker for minerals and non-op deals, closing over 120 transactions across the Permian, SCOOP/STACK, Haynesville, Bakken, Powder River Basin, DJ, and Eagleford. With deal sizes ranging from 50K upwards of 5 million and 1.5 NRAs upwards of 3,500 NRAs, the Texas Mineral Company can be flexible on where and how they can source your deal flow. For more information on how your team can work with the Texas Mineral Company, please email Toby Martinez at toby@thetexasmineralcompany.com. Need energy industry management experience at your fingertips? Opportune LLP, a leading global energy business advisory firm, has the capabilities needed to overcome your minerals and royalties team's technical, operational, and financial challenges. To learn more, search Opportune's podcast E2B, Energy to Business, on Apple and Spotify Podcasts, where Opportune examines emerging financial and technology trends and provides a broad perspective on ways to stay ahead, create opportunities, and execute market strategies. For more information, please visit www.opportune.com. Over the past 20 years, Riverbend Energy Group has been the definitive leader in the non-op and mineral space, where they are actively acquiring minerals in the Delaware Basin, Midland Basin, the Williston, and the Eagleford. Following their $1.8 billion sale of their non-op platform in 2022, they are also back actively acquiring non-op interests in the Delaware Basin, Midland Basin, and Williston. If you have minerals or non-op working interests in these areas that you would like to sell, then please visit www.riverbendenergygroup.com for more information.
So I have a question for you, and it's regards to merging portfolios. Is it a fair statement to say that it is easier to see eye to eye on value when it's a public going into a public? What I'm getting at is the idea of doing a double, triple, quadruple merger to get scale on the private side is nothing new. You know this. I'm sure you guys looked at it in the past. There's all sorts of folks who have said, well, if we stack hands, we could combine portfolios, and you name the basin. All the major players have all had these conversations. And ultimately, discussions fall apart because it's hard to value the undeveloped. And in a private market, you're valuing PUD and cash flow and all the different multiples you would look at. And it can be challenging. In a public market, you're getting value from the public markets in your stock. And so using that as a common ground and then seeing eye to eye, does it make it easier to bridge that gap?
Yeah, I think definitely so. You know, Tim, as you mentioned, you've always heard about the holy grail of private equity transactions and trying to bundle three or four groups together to create that entity of scale that's really attractive to folks. But we've always had the discussions here in the office, you know, 2021 into 2022. It's hard enough to get one deal done, much less trying to get two or three folks together. And so, and viewpoints in terms of relative value are always, you know, a question mark. And so when you think about potentially having two, three, four private equity firms in the mix, just gets very, very hard to get something like that done. So, and then the integration of that, how you work out the people issues, et cetera, can be problematic. So I just think, you know, as you indicated, when you're bringing entities like this, where there's markers in terms of, you know, what is the value of the two companies, it's much easier on a public to public transaction or a single-handed public to private transaction just between two groups rather than a bundling. Just because there is so much negotiation, so much paperwork, and just I think it's just very easy for the process to break down. So working with Sitio, they're great getting down to the finish line in terms of, you know, the last couple of weeks, getting it signed up until Labor Day, and then closing out the due diligence process, going through the shareholder approval process and vote. Chris and Carrie and Brett just did a tremendous job closing out that transaction and getting it closed by year end 2022. Because I think originally, if you went back and looked at that September 6th press release, I think that the original anticipated close date might have been the first quarter of this year. And so they really worked hard to get that deal closed in 2022. So hats off to them. And, you know, one of the reasons why we were comfortable and really thought that they could create a lot of value for shareholders because they do have a management team that's out there looking at these larger transactions. But, you know, I think that's a good transition or segue into what we're doing because, you know, we're sticking with the bread and butter here at Brigham Royalties. And really going back to kind of what I'd say is our roots, the grassroots, and doing those, you know, 50-acre transactions that we bundled together, 2,000 of them, you know, from 2013 to 2022 prior to selling, because we just think that there's a lot of value. You know, the Brigham name, is well respected. We still have the technical team in place that can rapidly evaluate. You know, we also have, what's interesting here being at Brigham is just Bud's such a consummate entrepreneur. One of the things that really allowed us to get back to work so quickly on January 3rd of this year was just the fact that he has an entity that he calls Brigham Earth, which is really a centralized, when you think about it, legal staff for any Brigham entity. There's HR in place, there's accounting staff in place, there's IT in place. So it really allowed us to take advantage of all those kind of centralized services while Jeff and I got out there and really started to rebuild. Because, you know, with the merger, all the data gets transitioned to Citio. They own everything. And so we basically didn't have any computers, didn't have a single mineral owner's address or phone number. So we were able to immediately start that process to rebuild databases in terms of who owned minerals where, start the process to rebuild systems in terms of, you know, didn't even have a model at that point in terms of how to value minerals, you know, rebuilding all the geo work, rebuilding all the reservoir engineering work in terms of EURs for a while. So, you know, I think it basically took us from January to kind of late February of this year to kind of get everything rebuilt, get the first letter, round of letters out to mineral owners in February, late February, closed our first deal mid-March. Really tremendous deal for us in Loving County, right out of the gate. Couldn't have asked for a better deal to start. We've seen a rig show up already, incremental permits. So I think it really speaks to kind of the system Bud's developed in terms of, you know, not just Brigham Royalties being able to take advantage of it, but Brigham Exploration Company, the newer version, which is the non-op company. Atlas, to some regard, was used it early on. But any of the Brigham entities can take advantage of this. And what it allows you to do is really concentrate on your core business and allow other people that has expertise to provide the HR, accounting services, et cetera. And you really, from right out of the gate, get out there and rebuild. Because there's no way we've been able to do what we've done if we'd had to go on out there and put in place a healthcare plan or to find office space, et cetera, or to go out and create a relationship with Dell to order, you know, order new computers. And so, you know, January 3rd, you're here, you're talking to all the Bud's people about doing all that. And so right on that first Tuesday after the new year, we're able to start that process to get up and running.
No, there's something to be said for that. Just kind of a funny side comment. I have MacBook, it crashed last week. So I had to get a new one and get everything back set up. So there's something to be said around a well-oiled machine and you do what you do really well. So when you have to start from ground zero and rebuild everything and download software, there's these humbling moments where you're like, hey, we just completed the biggest merger in history. How do we do this basically? Yeah. How does the email get set up? Right. Yeah. Yeah. You guys had a couple of moments like that. I knew I did last week. I feel pretty stupid. I'm like calling, you know, IT and different outsourcing services to get some of this stuff set up. But then when you get back up and running and do what you're good at, your core competency, you're off to the races, and you guys a great deal, especially right now. Loving County is very coveted. So to get a good asset in this market with all the competition is phenomenal.
Yeah, we just aren't limited to Loving. I mean, we're looking at all over Midlands. You know, we've looked at some Oklahoma deals, we've looked at some DJ deals, but thus far, you know, luckily we've been able to close on several Permian deals. But, you know, I think given our expertise, you know, we can hit all the, you know, the core areas again, like we did at Brigham Minerals in terms of, you know, do you want to layer in some Williston Basin, DJ, Oklahoma? But, you know, I think, again, the bread and butter is the Permian deals. But, you know, if you can find an attractively priced deals in any of those other basins, obviously we have the technical expertise to capitalize on those. So I wouldn't say we're just limited to Permian. So we're open for business across the board.
Yeah, Jeff, do you want to kind of break down? So for those listening, are you guys sourcing deals from broker network, white space deals? What are the criteria? And then what are really, you know, all the basins? Rob kind of ran through them. Is Haynesville in the mix with gas price dropping? Over to you.
Right. Yeah. You know, I've always kind of maintained the thought that I don't really care where a deal comes from as long as the economics, the numbers make sense for us. So if that's deals are brought to us by brokers, if we source them in-house, you know, again, if the numbers make sense, they make sense. I'm not against brokers wetting their beak, making some money in this thing as long as they're bringing us deals. And so it's kind of an all of the above approach. And, you know, as we kind of indicated, the last couple of years of Brigham Minerals, you know, we really were chasing the near-term activity. I mean, that's what the investors wanted. And so that's where really all of our focus had shifted to. So we abandoned the approach of buying the white space, good rock, but it took a back seat, certainly. And so now with the new company, with the fresh slug of capital, patient capital, we've kind of gone back to the focus of let's let the good rock drive us. Let that be number one, you know, is the rock tier one. And then, you know, we kind of go from there. Because at this point, we're not necessarily as concerned, is it going to get drilled up in the next 6 months, year, 2 years? You know, we're totally fine if something's going to take 4 or 5 years to get developed, as long as the rock is there and we know that it will ultimately get developed. So
will you guys be looking at New Mexico side of the Delaware or mostly in the
Pacific? Absolutely. Yeah, no, definitely. We'll look at anywhere, New Mexico Tech, you know, anywhere in the Permian. That's obviously going to be our bread and butter. You know, DJ would probably come next. Like Rob said, Oklahoma, even North Dakota, you know, that was kind of where we initially cut our teeth is North Dakota. So we know that basin extremely well. Opportunities are just limited there, but we're happy to look at deals there. You know, I think there were some discussions, should we jump in the Haynesville? Should we not? I mean, I think early stages, I think for us, sticking with our bread and butter, which is the oily plays, I think is kind of where we're going to keep our focus for now. That's not to say that at some point we might not jump into the Haynesville, but I think for now we'll stick with what we know.
And you guys weren't in the Eagle Ford before. Is Eagle Ford on the horizon at all? Or
you know, yeah, it wasn't for lack of trying. I'll say that. You know, Eagle Ford's just a different, you know, it's just a different animal. We looked at plenty of Eagle Ford deals and we'll still look at them. There just always seemed to be something, the bid-ask spread, we just never could really get there. We came close to actually on a couple large Eagle Ford deals, but ultimately that just didn't go through. But we love the Eagle Ford. It's just, I think, similar to North Dakota. I think all the low-hanging, middle-hanging, high-hanging fruit has all been picked over, and now you're dealing with, you know, people that just the opportunities just really aren't there. So, yeah, we'll look at them when they come, but we're probably not going to invest any dollars like on a ground game approach ourselves there.
And then for those listening, what is kind of the ideal transactional size range that you guys are looking at right now with your ground game?
Yeah, you know, with Brigham, it's similar with Brigham. You know, we pretty much looked at anything as long as it's, we don't want to look at something as small as call it 5 acres or more is typically where we want to be. And then far as, you know, size from there, I mean, anything upwards 50, 60, 70 million bucks. I mean, that's, we certainly have the capacity to take down large deals. We have the capacity to take down small deals. We have the, you know, kind of speaking back to the Brigham Earth side of things, you know, kind of having this bullpen of geologists and engineers that, you know, allows us to ramp up where we need to kind of grab them from the cloud, you know, and just say, hey, you know, we want to grab this geologist or grab this engineer. It allows us to really work up deals quickly, which is something I'd say Brigham Royalties, you know, going back to our focus on just buying minerals, it's allowed us to, we get a deal in, you know, we're turning that thing around even faster than we were before. Because it's all we're focused on is just the deal side of things now, which is great.
And I've been asking this recently, you know, for a group like y'all's that have a great brand and you've built something of scale, you're going to be on the shopping list for a lot of folks. So a lot of times you're not short deal flow. It's prioritizing it, knowing you get something done. And so what ends up being a filter for you guys is who have we done deals with before, right? That's always going to float people to the top of the pipeline. For those who haven't done deals with you, but feel they're sourcing good stuff, what are some things they can keep in mind for Brigham that's going to help vet them and get them in the initial interaction with you guys a fighting chance on a deal? Is there certain things that make it easier, harder in terms of transparency and what you guys like to see? Just break that down, because
that's a great question. And I'd say, you know, I've been doing this now for 15 years, and I'd say the brokerage groups that I've had that had the best success with are the guys that have been very transparent with us from the beginning. You know, they say, this is, look, I've got a lead here, right? This is a lead, you know, and, you know, frankly, we don't have the capital to take it down. You know, can you guys work with us here? You know, or, hey, I've got this PSA. Frankly, I don't have the funds to close it. You know, we'd love to flip it to you guys. And just being honest, right? I mean, that's probably the number one thing. Transparency, honesty, because as we all know, there's some sketchy individuals in this space, you know, and that sometimes give us a bad name. You know, I try to avoid those folks and stick with the folks that are true to their word, that do what they say they're going to do. And again, are just honest with me, with us. And the groups that I'd say it's been a win-win for both of us have been the groups that have come to us and have been very transparent and just said, this is the situation. This is what it is. This is who I'm dealing with. You know, let's work together. And that's typically been the recipe for success for us.
Awesome. All right, gentlemen. Well, good to have you back in the game. Thanks again for coming back on. Any closing comments, I'll hand it over to you.
No, just appreciate it. Great to catch up again. Great to kind of recap the story from last year through to current. And, you know, as we've mentioned kind of multiple times, you know, we're up and running here at Bergen Royalties. And so, you know, looking at all kinds of deals. And as Jeff mentioned, you know, we've rapidly turned around some deals here of late, even within a kind of 24-hour time period, and been very reactive to people, especially Jeff mentioned, very transparent. And so, you know, and I think equally on the other side of that, you know, when we're dealing with potential sellers that actually own the minerals, is to be transparent with them as well. And so it's a two-way street, you know, to the extent you're transparent with sellers, that makes them more comfortable. And so, because this is, I mean, it's a low probability business. Even when you're talking to people, providing an offer, you're still probably in a 2-4% rate in terms of actually getting a deal closed. And so transparency can help that. And so, you know, I think, you know, that's one of the things that you're, when you're working with Brigham, is, you know, very transparent, live up to a word. We sign a PSA, we're going to get that deal done, and we have the capital to do so. So look forward to, you know, working with folks and, you know, continuing on the tradition of doing those 50 acre deals and building up the size of the portfolio over the next few years.
Awesome, guys. Appreciate you coming on again.
Yep. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Tim.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to this episode of the podcast. I hope you enjoyed. The Minerals and Royalties podcast is meant for informational purposes only. Tim Powell and the Minerals and Royalties Authority are not promoting any specific securities or investments, nor are they providing any type of investment advice. If you enjoyed the episode, then I encourage you to tune in more and also check out the Minerals and Royalties Authority YouTube channel. Thanks, and see you next time.